Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, new lunch items in California Adventure, a VIP Oogie Boogie Bash experience is available.
A new green milk variety in Galaxy's Edge. We talk to filmmaker Matthew Serrano about a forgotten Disneyland rock band and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of July 10th, 2024. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tag Bushman. We'd like to thank everyone who supports the show. This week, we'd like to give a special shout out to Tammy C for becoming a new weekly tier, and to Lynn P, Chrissy A, and Stephanie S for continuing to support the show. If you'd like to help support the show and get ad-free versions of each episode, head on over to dlweekly.net/support and become an official weekly tier.
Now let's get to the news.
Read all about it. DL Weekly reports from intrepid correspondents Tag and Teresa. You heard it here first, ladies and gents. Breaking news!
A new lunch menu is coming to a central restaurant in Disney California Adventure. Starting July 12th, Carthay Circle Restaurant will add these new items to the prefix lunch menu, which is only available Friday through Sundays. The first entree is a ginger and soy glazed tri-tip, followed by pan roasted shrimp and grilled chicken meatloaf. One of the new starters is the green garbanzo beans fritters and a Greek-style salad. The menu is priced at $59 plus tax for adults.
The pan roasted shrimp and the ginger and soy glaze tri-tip both look really good.
I thought you were going to go for the tri-tip. That's the one that like made me just, that's the one. Like of the three, that is the one that I would order. 100%.
Always go for the meat option.
I love the steak. I always go for the steak option. I'm not a big seafood person. Chicken.
The problem with seafood, and I'm seeing that with these photos that we have linked in the show notes as well, is that we have, like, a steak is, like, a decent piece of steak, but then you get to the shrimp and there's, like, four shrimp on this, and I'm like, or five shrimp, maybe. And I'm like, come on, you can put more than five shrimp on here.
I do like the bed of, like, vegetables that the shrimp comes on. That mm-hmm. looks delicious. But I'm really curious about the soy ginger glaze. Like, I'm really curious about the soy ginger glaze. Or ginger and soy glaze on that.
It sounds like
on
it'd be
that
great.
Tri-tip steak. Yes. Yes, it does. I also think those fritters look really interesting. The green garbanzo beans fritters. It looks like there's maybe pomegranate seeds
that does look
in
like
with it too.
Yep.
And of course, you know me, I love a good salad. And man, that Greek style salad looks so fresh and just refreshing.
It's not a wedge salad though. I feel like
it's
you're
not a wedge salad.
You're a wedge salad
I do
girl.
Enjoy wedge salads. That is very true.
Well, there's a new milk in town in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. For a limited time, a special green milk with Clatooine patty frog eggs Ooh. Is available at the milk stand. This version has the standard green milk mixed with the strawberry puree and blueberry popping spheres. The new version is $9.49.
Okay, so I don't remember the last. I think the last time I had blue or green milk was the first time we were in Galaxy's Edge, which was back in 2019. I have not had any of the concoctions from the milk stand since then. This, however, I'm really hoping that this is still sticking around in August because I have this really straight. I really want to try this for some reason. There's something about this. I don't know if it's the weirdness and how these two things kind of mix but don't really mix in the layering, but the flavors also sound really like they'd mesh well together. So I think I need to try this.
The Disney food blog said that they liked it because it felt more like a smoothie, oh. which my biggest problem with the milk has been it kind of has that like, it leaves like a film, not a film, but it leaves like a coating in your, and I don't appreciate that part. But if it was kind of more smoothie, like maybe it would be better. I don't know. I'm not like a huge green or blue milk person. I do think green is better than blue in general, and I like strawberries. I think the blueberry pearl things could be really cool. Mm-hmm. I would definitely give this one a shot, and hopefully it elevates it to a spot which would make it more appealing to me.
Well, if you didn't get Oogie Boogie Bash tickets, but you still want to attend this year, no matter the cost, well, you're in luck. An Oogie Boogie Bash VIP tour might just be the answer. The VIP tour is an 8-hour tour for up to 8 guests and includes admission to the bash with an early entry at 2:30 p.m., a $30 food and beverage credit per guest, and priority access to Villains Grove as well as other attractions, exclusive VIP character meet and greets, and a VIP parade viewing. The price ranges, however, start at $7,500 up to $8,500 depending on the date that you go.
So, first of all, I don't feel like I've ever heard of a VIP tour for any other after-hours party that they've done.
I think you can request a like, it's not something that they advertise, but sure. I think you've always been able to request a VIP tour into parties, but it's not like this, where it's kind of this special little package deal.
Yeah. It sounds interesting. It's a lot of money if you're looking to have, like, the ultimate Oogie Boogie Bash experience. This is it. I did find it amusing that Mice Chat reported in their article that the tickets took a while to sell out, but it finally did sell out, and they got all types of questions about how to buy tickets afterwards. It's like, well, you had time. Yeah. You should have bought the tickets already.
I do also want to say, because there's also more fun goodies that come along with this, there is the VIP viewing for the Frightfully Fun Parade does have sweet treats, so I'm wondering if it's kind of like a little dessert package type parade, dessert package type thing. But there's also an exclusive VIP tour Oogie Boogie Bash pin, a jack-o'-lantern candy holder so you can carry all your goodies around, as well as valet parking. I need to know what this VIP Oogie Boogie Bash pin looks like. I feel like it looks... I just know it's going to look amazing. But it's a very expensive pin.
I don't think it's worth $7,500.
But it's a very expensive pin. I'm still curious what it looks like, though.
We've, like, mastered Oogie Boogie Bash at this point, so I feel like spending $7,500 for us and 6 of our friends would not be a good use of our money, I would say.
However, you do get the VIP access to, like, the character meet and greets.
Sure. Which,
that's a big deal, because we did not actually go meet and greet with Minnie, Daisy, and Clarabelle last year that were dressed as the Sanderson sisters, because that line can get a little crazy and a little ridiculous. So if you could skip those lines, and if you're a character person, you want to hit up all the treat trails, you want to hit up all the characters, you want to do literally all the things, this is probably the only way that you can ensure to be able to do that. Because some of the lines, if you're not timing things exactly right, it can be a little crazy. The treat trails are always wonderful because they keep moving. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not in, like, front having a direct interaction with the character, it's really fun to watch all of the other interactions that people are having, versus it's not really that exciting to watch other people get their pictures taken with characters.
Yeah.
When you're waiting in those lines, and those lines don't seem to move along as quickly. Plus, you're not being given candy when you're waiting in those lines.
That's true. Well, Disney Vacation Club members will have a new location to hang out in Disney California Adventure soon. The Golden Vine House will open soon, offering DVC members complimentary Mickey Mouse ice cream bars, coffees and breakfast treats, Wednesday wine mixers, and character opportunities on select dates and locations, because there's also some DVC stuff that goes along with this. This was what the Golden Vine Winery and the Blue Sky Cellar used to be in California Adventure, by where you would go to the Magic Key Terrace now.
Yeah, so all of these special items are part of DVC's, quote, welcome home weeks. So if you are a DVC member, be sure to go check out the special events page to get more information on when these things are happening and where these things are happening. But because this venue was included within the welcome home weeks lists of events, that's kind of the hint that, ooh, this is coming soon. It's just around the corner that this is going to finally be up and operational for DVC guests to enjoy.
Again, it's another one of those experiences where I'm like, I'm not a DVC member, no, but this would be really cool to have as a DVC member.
I do think, and DVC members, please write in, let us know if we're wrong. I do think members are allowed to bring guests in to these areas with them. So if this is, so maybe we're not DVC members, but maybe we have a friend that is, so we can go check out the space and see. Otherwise, it is kind of like a a private little retreat. We did get to go to the Star, the one that's above the Starcade. What is it called? The Star.
The one above the launch.
Star bay. View. Is that what it's called? The Star View Lounge?
Something like, yeah, that sounds right.
We did get to go see that one, and it is. It's kind of like this quiet little bubble, and like great place to go just to kind of relax and unwind. They had complimentary snacks and drinks for the DVC members. We were just there just to kind of, we didn't take part in any of that. We were just there to see the space. And first of all, the space is really, really cool because they've got all sorts of throwbacks to OG Tomorrowland in there, including things from the archives that are on display.
Yeah.
But I could see how this would be a really nice perk for DVC members to be able to kind of escape the heat, escape the crowds, and recharge.
And if you are not a DVC member, but you would like to become a DVC member, I did notice, I got an email about this today, so I was kind of looking at it quickly, but you could save up to $9,500 on your membership with a summer offer. So if you become a member between now and September 30th is when they're running these deals, depending on how many points you get and stuff, there's some savings that you can get for this. So if you are interested in that, please go ahead and look into that for those different areas. In fact, one of the big places where you can save money is the Villas at the Disneyland Hotel, which I was surprised because the price per point of the villas was more than the price per point than Aulani, which I was like, wow. Because Aulani, I think, was $225 per point, and the Villas at Disneyland were $239, I want to say, when I was looking at it. So,
because they're
awesome. If you want to take advantage of these welcome home things, it's a great time. They're running some deals on it. If you go to Disney a lot and you stay on property, I've heard that it can be a good deal if that's your normal run.
Magic spoilers ahead for a mishap that happened during Fantasmic. During a recent performance of Fantasmic, Mickey's pyrotechnics in his gloves went off prematurely when he was going up the stairs to get to the landing where he normally goes off. We're talking about where the fireworks shoot out of his fingers. No cast had reported injuries, but it is interesting to watch Mickey kind of lose control of his magic. But super thankful that no one was hurt. This could have been something like really awful and scary, especially since it feels very recent. We had the big pyro mishap with, of course, Murphy, our beloved dragon. But yeah, poor Mickey. That does look like, in watching, the cast member did a really good job. Yeah. Or Mickey did a really good job in the situation. As soon as Mickey noticed that the pyro was going off when it shouldn't have been going off, he immediately raised his hands and kind of kept them out and out of the way. So nothing, you know, so I think the reaction on there was really, really good.
Yes. It's just kind of interesting because, you know, anybody who's done any performing anything anywhere, the big showbiz thing is the show must go on. And I'll tell you, Mickey did a great job because that happened and went through the rest of the choreography and everything. And Bing Bang Boom did a great job. But the thing we're most excited for is that nobody, not excited for, but thankful for, is that nobody was harmed or anything like that. So that's great. One last thing we wanted to talk about for this week is this huge D23 Ultimate Disney sweepstakes with fantastic prizes. So
boy, they're not kidding.
No. D23 members can enter to win a bunch of different things. Teresa said that she signed up for 6 of these things. I have not yet because the browser's being weird. I'm trying to sign up for 12 of them.
And that's not even all that there is to offer.
No.
There are, of course, I should have known.
23.
There are 23 different prize packs to choose from. We will not go through every single one of them. We will make sure to have a link in the show notes so you can register to try and win one of these fabulous, fabulous
prize
packs.
What are you excited for on here? What do you think is like one or two of the best things?
I can't even handle. Okay, so the Disney Treasure Maiden Voyage, I think, is huge to be able to win that. The Maiden Voyage on any of the new ships, of course, is going to be very, very spendy if you were to pay for it out of pocket. But this prize pack includes a 7-night Disney cruise aboard the new Disney Treasure. You get a stateroom with up to 4 people that you're allowed to bring, including you. Of course, you get all of your meals are included, which is typical of a cruise, but your onboard gratuities are all taken care of for you. Taxes, fees, and port expenses also taken care of. Plus, you get a night stay at the Walt Disney World Resort before you embark on your cruise, as well as 4 round-trip coach airfares. But this is the boat that has the Haunted Mansion bar. So among other amazing things that this new ship has to offer. But that one is stupidly exciting to me. There's just some wildly cool things. Like, make sure, if you're looking at this, that you open each of what these prize packs are. Because a sneaky one, Tag actually just put it up, but a sneaky one that I noticed, it said, the prize pack just says Oogie Boogie Bash, a Disney Halloween party at the Disneyland Resort. I'm like, oh, that's cool. We enjoyed Oogie Boogie Bash. So I'm assuming, oh, it's like tickets to Oogie Boogie Bash, maybe a hotel stay. Oh no, it is much, much more. It's up to 4 tickets to the Oogie Boogie Bash, plus you get one of those amazing VIP tours for the Oogie Boogie Bash VIP tour for your bash night. You also get a separate Disneyland Resort VIP tour for a day for up to 8 hours. So you get, in essence, 2 VIP tours. Hotel accommodations, up to 4 3-day Disneyland Resort park hopper tickets, a $600 Disney gift card for round-trip coach airfare, and ground transportation between the airport and the resort area. So, come on. This should be like the VIP tour package that happens to coincide with, like, Oogie Boogie Bash.
Right. The other one that I thought was really cool was at 21 Royal. You get a dinner for the winner and up to 11 guests at 21 Royal in Disneyland Park. For those of you who do not know, 21 Royal is what was going to be Walt and Lillian's apartment above Pirates of the Caribbean. For a while, it was the Disney Gallery, and now it has turned into, it was the Dream Suite for a while, and now it is the 21 Royal restaurant. You get up to 12 Disneyland Resort 2-day park hopper tickets, and up to 12 $500 Visa or MasterCard gift cards to be used by the winner for each guest to help defray cost of travel. So that's, like, wildly super amazing. And then the other one was the Walt Disney World Tiana's Bayou Adventure trip, which was room accommodations for a concierge-level room with up to 4 persons per room for 4 nights, 4 4-day theme park tickets with Park Hopper, 1 theme park VIP tour guide for up to 8 consecutive hours for the winner and guests, a Disney gift card worth $1,000, 4 round-trip coach airfare to Orlando International, 4 tickets to the Magic Kingdom fireworks dessert parties, and round-trip ground transportation for up to 4 from the airport to the resort. So
amazing.
There's a lot of great things here. There's Alani. There's some really unique experiences. Like
Star Wars Celebration, which is happening in Japan.
Be drawn as a Pixar character.
Go inside and experience the Walt Disney Animation Studios. I mean...
Then there's unique ones like get a Disney Parks-inspired ice cream cooler.
Something for everyone.
That's what I'm saying.
You could even be drawn into a Marvel comic. And there's like all these like... there's Way of Water, Avatar, The Way of Water screening and tour, Disney on Broadway, a trip to the world premiere of Disney's Mufasa. It's wildly cool. Wildly, wildly cool. So if you're a D23 member, please go check this out. Enter for all the things because none of these things, like, I would like be ecstatic to win any of these things. They are just ridiculously, ridiculously cool.
Amazing.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are lots of different sounds that you might hear. Drive too fast, and you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing. The sound of ambulances and first responders desperately trying to free you from the wreckage. You could hear the beeps of a heart monitor. You could hear doctors and nurses in an emergency room as you're being treated for your injuries. You could hear the sound of worried family members in the hospital waiting room, hoping to hear that you're okay. You could even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral. Because if you drive over the speed limit, whether by a lot or by a little, you can do damage that's beyond repair. You could seriously injure yourself. Or worse, you could hurt and even kill someone else. When you speed, you put everyone on the road in danger. One way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA.
We have to get the snacks for Tag and Teresa and James and Bern. Oh, and Cinderella. Time for Snack Chat.
Well, this week for Snack Chat, we are returning to Churro Talk with Vern. Vern, what churro or churros do you have to talk about this week?
We're going to talk about two different churros. We are going to cross the Esplanade, and we're going to Disney California Adventure. And our first one that we're going to check out, we're going to visit Mater at the Junkyard Jamboree. Ooh. And have, well, the Junkyard Jamboree churro comes from the Cozy Cone, specifically Cozy Cone number 1. The Junkyard Jamboree churro has espresso sugar and a generous pouring of dark chocolate sauce, and then it's covered with M&M's, sour gummy worms, and a mixture of other candy. They call it the gravel is what they pour over it, and the dark chocolate sauce is the motor oil that's been poured over.
Doesn't that sound appetizing?
I mean, it's in theme.
Yep, so it is very themed. It is very much junkyard themed, and I found it absolutely delightful. The espresso sugar with the dark chocolate sauce, and then the blending with the M&Ms and the sour gummy worms, I was skeptical. I looked at them and I said, sour gummies with dark chocolate and espresso, is that going to be too much? But I felt that the flavors really blended together really well. I could see that this particular churro for many people could be a little too rich. It was a lot of flavor all at once, and there was a lot of dark chocolate to it. But personally, for me, I'm giving it a solid 8.5 to 9 out of 10. I would definitely try it again.
I was going to say, Teresa, you tried this one too, right? And you really liked it?
I did. I was not sure of it because when Fern first walked over with it, I'm like, that's a lot. There's a lot going on there. I feel like this is going to be like sweetness sugar overload. And somehow it wasn't. Actually, the chocolate sauce / motor oil was pretty, this is going to sound bad. I don't mean for it. It was really kind of like, it was really thin. Like, I don't want to say watery,
so
but it wasn't
like goopy.
Yeah, it wasn't goopy. It wasn't, and it was just like a hint of chocolate sauce. It wasn't like in your face chocolate sauce, if that makes sense. It wasn't too rich, and I don't know if it was maybe the espresso sugar that kind of helped cut with the sweetness, but I really also wasn't understanding how sour gummy worms and chocolate was gonna work, because I felt like that was
too much,
just gonna be like clashing flavors, but it worked. This was wildly surprising, and I feel bad because you and James were doing something and we ran over to grab the churro and we had demolished it before you guys had even gotten over there, so you didn't even get to try it.
I mean, that sounds like an amazing churro.
It was so good. Like, it was very surprising.
What was it called again, Vern?
That is the Junkyard Jamboree churro, and if you want to try it, just head over to Cozy Cone number 1 over in Carsland.
Okay. Oh yeah, here it is. I just wanted to see like a visual of it again. Huh.
That one has even different, like the photo you just found has different stuff than what ours had. Ooh. Ours had M&M's, sour gummy worms, and there was like this random chocolate, what looked like a feather.
Oh. Yeah.
That was part of it. So it was just like random candies, I guess, that they scooped on. But I was very pleasantly surprised. But yeah, do you see this? Look at how much like chocolate syrup was all
that
over
is a lot of
thing.
Chocolate syrup. It does look like oil.
And I was expecting like that it was like Hershey's chocolate syrup. It wasn't. It was something that was lighter than that. But it was, yeah, I was surprised. I thought I was going to have to down a gallon of water after having like 2 bites because it was going to be very, very rich. And somehow it just wasn't.
That's good. Are we doing one churro this week or
nope,
two?
Nope, we're going to go for a second one.
Okay.
Yes. So we're going to leave Cars Land and we're going to head over to Terran Treats over by Guardians. We're going to have the blueberry cheesecake churro. This one was rolled in cinnamon sugar and drizzled with vanilla and blueberry syrup and topped with a lemon streusel. For this, the blend of flavors with the spice of the cinnamon, with the sweet of the syrups, and the zest of the lemon, all of that paired together just excellently. There was the softness of the streusel kind of offset with the crunch of the outer of the churro, and then you had the gooiness and the syrup, and I mean, all of that just kind of making for a texture medley going on. Personally, I found this one to be delicious. I'm going to give that one also a solid 8.5 to 9, maybe even a 9.5. I mean, it was like a blackberry pie almost, or, you know, a blueberry pie kind of going on for me. And I really very much enjoyed it and will definitely try again.
This one was brought to you as we were in line because I went over to get a cosmic cream orb, which I have a thing for. I don't know why. And I was like, oh, there's a specialty churro here. I have to get this for her. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I'm glad. It's colorful, too. It has like some yellow-ish kind of topping on it that I thought made it look really nice. So
it was good. And the yellow, so the yellow topping was like the lemon crumble.
Oh, okay.
And it really wasn't overly lemon. The lemon had a nice like blend to kind of cut a little bit of the sweetness from the blueberry sauce. Nice. I really liked this one too. This was actually breakfast for Vern and I one day. So we enjoyed this churro and then went on Guardians of the Galaxy.
And it stayed.
And it was really good.
Where did you rate that one again, Vern?
I gave that a between 8.5 and 9.5. I mean, that was it's a solid, delightful. If you like a blueberry pie, if you're into fruit pies, if you like a blueberry pie or a strawberry pie, you know, that type of pie experience, it really did just, it had that nice homey feel to it. It was a solid, good, sweet, awesome churro. I really enjoyed it.
I mean, it's great when you have two churros on Churro Talk with Vern that were both highly rated.
Yes. Oh, I mean, you got to really screw up to be a bad churro. Let's be honest. So next week, we'll come down to our final two. So stay tuned next week for those. And thank you for listening.
Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We begin this week with a brief check on the Disney treasure as Disney drops more and more detail. This week, we got a look into another themed lounge on the new ship. If you're into the vibes of a 70s jazz club, or if you're a fan of the Aristocats, you are going to love the Scat Cat Lounge. This place is inspired by the Parisian home from the classic Disney movie, from the piano covered with wet paint paw prints down to the ornate rugs on the floor. All around the room, you'll find references to the characters from this movie and the music that made it such a fun outing. For those who might not have visited this classic in a while, pop it on Disney Plus sometime before your trip. As with so many of these new spaces on the treasure, you need to be prepared to soak in all of those clever details. We also heard a bit about the new Guardians of the Galaxy dinner show. Join Groot as he plans a party for his pal Rocket. You know this show will be a blast and feature plenty of awesome tunes. On alternating nights, you can also dine during the Avengers show first featured on the Disney Wish. The maiden voyage of the Disney treasure has yet to be announced, but will likely happen this December 2024. So many big details are already in place. The Aquamouse tubes are mostly completed, as are most of the major features on the top deck. I'm willing to bet this ship will be ready in no time. Last time, I mentioned National Geographic Expeditions, promising a little bit more info. How about a quick glance at a 9-day tour of Morocco? From your trips beginning in Casablanca to its closing moments in Marrakesh, your family will have an incredible time filled with art, architecture, history, and cuisine. Travel through centuries-old outposts and towns. Visit mosques, museums, mountains, and the Sahara Desert. Cook with masters of Middle Eastern cuisine, learn about this ancient region and its blend of cultures and influences from multiple continents. Through it all, you'll stay in style at hotels handpicked by local experts. Remember that your National Geographic Expedition tour price includes many meals and all transportation and living expenses. You have the freedom to explore along with the carefully planned experiences Disney tours are known for. Ask for details. Some of the upcoming Moroccan tours are discounted down to about $1,236 per person. That is for 9 days, friends. Check it out. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you'd like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, Concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Thanks, Eric.
Pilots, we've detected some producer questions near Jakku. Report to your DL Weekly vessels and make the jump to hyperspace. The 77 Squadron will provide support during your trivia mission. Good luck, and may the Force be with you.
Hello, you've found your way to Trivia Land. Welcome.
We did.
Yeah.
We made it through a forest of churros.
I mean, they were some pretty good churros that producer Vern had on this last trip, right? Not nearly enough.
It was a bad one. Like, really, thinking back on all of the different churros, there was not one that I was just like, ooh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure on the scale of 1 to 10, if Vern ever consistently used that scale, 6 was his lowest rated churro, so.
So far.
Not to spoil any churros he hasn't talked about yet, but.
So far his lowest rated churro is 6.
Yeah, that sounds right. But that's Snack Chat. We're here in Trivia Land, where I've got 4 more trivia questions that I brought home with me from our trip, and I think are going to be some doozies.
Why do you do this to us?
I get creative when we're at the park, right?
He's making us think. I mean, he said to me in the car ride over, he goes, learn stuff. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I enjoy learning things, especially when it's about Disneyland.
Our listeners also love in learning things, so.
Some really good
learn
stuff.
Learn us some stuff, James.
All right, let's start with learning. First question. What is the name of the area near Harbor Galley that can serve as a dry dock for both the Mark Twain and sailing ship Columbia?
Well, it's not Pelican's Landing, because that's the seating area.
Isn't it Harper's Galley or something like that?
Harper's Galley?
Not Galley. Harper's Landing?
I don't know, so I'm going to go with stumped. You're going to go with Harper's Landing?
It's Harper's something, I think.
James will let us know.
I will let you know.
The thing is like, I feel like I know this one, but like, my brain is like not putting the right letters together, perhaps.
It's such a cool area that we don't spend enough time in. Like, it is so well-themed back there. It used to be kind of a hidden secret, and it was a little bit quieter. Now the secret's kind of been let out, so more people know about this kind of extended seating area back along the rivers of America there. But it's a really cool themed space. If you have time, or if you're waiting in a crazy long line to get fresh chocolate chip cookies, make sure you're paying attention, because there's a lot of details and a lot of theming back there.
It really is. And that's how you find good trivia questions like this. But let's go on to our second question. Sticking close to that area, sort of. Where can I find a depiction of Mary Read in the Disneyland park?
Who?
Mary Read.
I don't know who that is. Should I know who that is?
Probably not.
I don't know.
I don't know who that is.
This is a stumper. We're going to learn lots this week, Tag.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Since I'm stumping you, let's give you a fair shot. Question 3. Who hosts each game in Toy Story Midway Mania, not including the pie-throwing practice at the beginning? Which characters basically lead the games?
Isn't it Ham?
Oh.
No, or is there one for each one?
Because there's like the Green Army Men. Does Jesse lead one?
I think Jesse leads one.
Okay.
Ham definitely leads one. T-Rex.
The alien? Do the aliens lead it, or are they just part of it?
Well, they can't talk. They just go, ooh.
Is it then Buzz that leads the one with the aliens? I do think Woody is one of them.
To give you a goal, there are 5 different games.
I'm going
to
say Buzz. Sarge, Jesse. I think Woody is the first.
Ham,
like,
definitely.
Is Woody the first one? Like, well, the first one?
But now I'm confused because Ham tells us in the beginning, because he's like, as you're doing like the to learn how to play the games, he's like, keep shooting because you can't run out.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if like, does he come back then later? Because that's the only thing that's stuck in my head. Because I think my brain goes into panic just trying to hit things and I'm not paying attention to what they're saying.
That's true. Well, maybe let's think of the game. So we've got Sarge and like breaking the plates.
Oh, wait. James, could you tell us what the games are?
I think I can do that.
This might be helpful.
Give me a sec, because the characters are in the names, so I'm going to make sure I get these right for you.
I think we can do this. I think we can do this.
There's plates, there's balloons, there's the rockets.
Rex has to be with the... I think we're going to swap Rex out for Ham. Rex has to be the balloons, because that's prehistoric themed. That's all dinosaur themed.
And Buzz has to be the rocket things, because I don't think it's the aliens.
No, I don't think it's the aliens, because you're throwing stuff at them.
And then there's like the Old West town.
Yeah, and I don't remember if that's Woody or Jesse.
There's a mine cart thing. Is that Stinky Pete? Would he be?
Could be
somebody.
Could be.
Is it? It's not. Oh, Bullseye doesn't talk. I was like, because there's also, but I think that's the same. Anyway, what?
Would you like me to give you the games? Or are you good?
Give us the games.
All right. So the first one you run into is an egg throwing game.
Ooh.
That's with the animals.
Yep.
The barnyard animals.
Yep.
I think that one's Jesse.
Okay. Are you sure it's not Ham? Because he's literally a barnyard animal? Okay.
The second one is a dart throwing game.
And that's the one with the dinosaurs, so I think that's Rex.
Okay.
The third one is a baseball throwing / plate breaking.
Okay, and that's definitely Sarge.
Yep. Yeah, because it's got the little stars on it.
He's like, break that plate! These ain't your mama plates! I can't remember what all it is that he says.
Iconic voice line.
He's okay. really yelling at you during that
one.
The fourth one is ring toss.
That's the rockets.
Yeah, I think that might be Buzz.
Okay.
And the fifth game is the suction cup shooting game.
I don't know. Perhaps that's Woody. Or it's Prospector.
Who did you say the first one was?
Is it Jesse for the egg toss? I know Jesse is talking to you during one of these.
Are you sure Jesse isn't the one that's doing the darts and Ham is not the farm animal one?
So you don't think Rex is part of it?
No, Rex is doing the dinosaurs. I'm talking about, because you're at the beginning where you're throwing eggs at the farm animals. Yeah. That's Ham. So what I'm saying is Jesse's this last thing. It's not Woody. So it's Sarge, Ham, Rex, Buzz.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jesse, Rex, Sarge, Buzz, and Woody.
Okay.
And our last question is a cast member costume question.
Ooh, Tag's favorite.
I just love cast member costumes.
I know you do. We're keeping this one nice and simple. They're wearing fluffy white button-up shirts covered with a brown vest. Then they have orange pants, brown shoes, typically boots or boot-like. Orange pants.
This is easy?
Yeah.
Okay.
I said I'm keeping it simple in my description. I shouldn't say easy question.
Sure. Okay. Orange pants and what now?
And they can also wear a hat if they want to.
Orange pants. I can't even, like, I'm stuck on the orange pants.
Orange pants.
And a brown vest.
Yep, brown vest on top of that fluffy white shirt.
Fluffy. Like puffy or like fluffy, like furry?
Yeah, like puffy.
Like puffy, okay. I'm like, I don't remember any fur costumes. And I would feel very bad for those cast members, so that'd be very, very warm. Orange pants. Is it... Wait. Say it again.
So they got those, like, fluffy kind of white button-up shirts covered with a brown vest, orange pants, brown boot-like shoes, and they can also wear a hat if they want to.
Pirates.
Yeah.
Pirates, that's final answer.
But orange pants.
Yeah, I think it's like a dirty orange.
Oh, like a burnt orange?
Mm-hmm.
But see, I feel like James should say burnt orange.
Bright orange.
Okay. Yeah, I'll stick with pirates. Don't be looking up anything.
Just have to know now. How did I do? Well, You have to wait to find out, because first, it's time for our discussion topic of the week, and then we'll come back for all the right answers that they didn't have.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are talking with a filmmaker and entrepreneur who covered something that I bet you a lot of our audience has never heard of before, which was the Disneyland rock band Helix from the early 80s, like around the time I was born kind of situation. Let's welcome Matthew Serrano to the show. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty good.
I'm going to just jump in and say it. I just freshly watched it today, so I'm like so ready to talk about this. I can't wait. But first, we have some questions to kind of get to know you a little bit better, Matthew. So what is your Disney story? Can you kind of tell us what got you interested in either Disney the company or Disneyland the place?
Yeah, I've always been a fan of Disney. It started off with my parents collected like all the Disney VHS tapes. And then took me to Disneyland. And I think what really cemented it is I remember there was one night we had this like childhood friend, family, like, you know, that situation when your parents are like friends with like their parents. So then you become friends with the kids kind of thing. Yeah, so yeah. Like there's this one family that we would always hang out with. I still am in touch with the girl. Her name is Diana. Her older sister was the one that really first unlocked like being like Disney obsessed in my brain, because I always was like, yeah, Disney is cool, Disney is fun. And then it was just like, yeah, did you know that there's a basketball court up in the top of the Matterhorn? Hey, did you know that you're actually not going backwards on Indiana Jones, or you know, like it just yeah. like it just kept going on and on and on and on and on. She just like started telling me all these things, all these secrets and stuff, and literally like my brain was just like what? And then I think the other thing that really started to drive my Disney addiction was getting access to the internet, and then getting access to YouTube, and then realizing that people were uploading like the Space Mountain song, like the song that you hear when you go on Space Mountain. What do you mean I could just listen to it a million times over and over and over again, just on my parents' computer? That's crazy. I think that is definitely the beginnings of my addiction, for sure.
You're bringing back some memories for me, because my Disney addiction, Disney addiction started like when I first went to the park, but when I got internet, I remember this was around the time, this was dial-up days. Parents, kids, if you don't know what that is, ask your parents. And there was like websites that people during the construction of California Adventure were like, there was a viewing platform and people would go up and take like photos and go get them developed and then like scan them into the computer and put them online, and you'd have to wait like as they drew slowly. And I just remember thinking it was the coolest thing that they were expanding this place. I was so excited for. So your story reminded me of that.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah. So when you go to Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go through the Castle to Fantasyland, right to Tomorrowland? And the bonus we've added on this, because people have opinions, is do you have a tunnel that you prefer when you first get to the park? Do you go under the left tunnel or the right tunnel?
Okay, I was going to ask if this is a tunnel question or a hub question, because if we're both talking about tunnels, if we're talking about tunnels, it's just whatever line is the shortest. Yep. That's the honest answer. It's just whatever line is shortest, and then that's the tunnel I'm going through. But in terms of, like, if I were to go right now, I haven't been in a while. If I were to go right now and I was going to do, like, yeah, full circle left, full circle right, it depends. I think that if it's early in the morning, I think I'm going left. If it's later in the evening, I'm kind of going to go right, because I just feel like whenever it's later in the evening, the craziness is all the closer you get to Fantasmic and stuff like that. Tomorrowland is nice in the evening because all the lights are on, the music. It's like one of my favorite like park music loops. And yeah, it just feels like in a weird way, the quiet side of Disneyland, because while everyone's, you know, rushing for parades and fireworks and Fantasmic, none of that is happening over in Tomorrowland. So that's my answer. Early day, starting left, late, starting right.
You know, I never thought about that, that there is a lot going on the west side of the park in like later, at night, yeah. And in the that's a good way to do it. Yeah.
And Tomorrowland's not really fun to be in when like it's the middle heat of the day with the sun just like
it does have the cool some of the down. Coolest lighting.
So
yeah,
so that's perfect to be there in the evening.
Yeah.
So
plus bonus points as well. Galactic Grill now does, for the last few years they've been doing this, they do a late night menu too.
Oh.
Which is pretty fun. And every once in a while, they'll put something good onto the late night menu.
We'll have to check that out.
And I feel no better way than ending your day with a monorail ride.
It's true.
Back to the hotel and then hitting up Trader Sam's to close out your day. So
perfect.
If you're staying on property, we're always on harbor somewhere. But yes, we could. But yeah. And two times ago when we were in Tomorrowland, we went to the Galactic Grill and we're like, why don't we ever eat here? Because there was like so much, like it was so quick and easy to get food there. I'm like, I don't know why we don't try to eat here more. Anyway.
Yeah. I think the food is mostly bad. And then every once in a while, they'll pull out something that you're that's like, true. Okay, all right.
That's true, yeah.
What was it that I had? The last thing, I think it was a breakfast burrito that I had, was one of the last things that I had that I was like, you know what? That was pretty good.
They do, yeah, I would say their kind of regular menu's not very exciting, but they do well for the, like, I don't know, seasonal or the holiday type menus. They get good stuff in for that. Like Pride Night, that's why I wanted to go eat, was Pride Night. There.
Darth by chocolate for like 3 years in a row. I have not been able to get me and my girlfriend. We've been wanting to try it because it's always sold out, which means that it's worth trying.
Right.
It's very popular.
Well, we're going to finish up our little getting to know you questions and we'll kind of get into the meat of this. So what is your favorite attraction? So yes, this is a Disneyland specific podcast, but all attractions are equal in our opinion. So it can be from any of the Disney parks.
Oh man. Okay, I'm gonna say that Indiana Jones, I would say, is my favorite. And then if we're talking about just strictly Disneyland and the Disneyland Resort and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I could expand out to the Disney parks, I think I would go with Phantom Manor at Disneyland Paris.
So what it's is it
that kind of blew my mind. Yeah. That kind of like, you know how like you have those moments in your life where like there's no going back, where like your brain chemistry gets rewritten. Like I remember like for filmmaking, watching Raiders of the Lost Ark and being like, that is like the coolest. That's like the coolest movie I've ever seen. Like I want to make a movie like that.
Yeah.
I need to know, how do you make a movie like that? That's how I felt with Phantom Menor. I was just like, how can a ride have this much sauce in it? Like, I love the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
But, like, how did they make the Haunted Mansion better?
Right.
How did they do that? I don't understand. Like, I couldn't comprehend it. And I wrote it so many times, like, just ran it back. Because I was like, I need to soak it all in because I don't know when I can come back.
Right. That's the hard part with those rides across the oceans. Is there's some just ridiculously crazy, amazing rides. And you can't experience them constantly like you can the parks that are closer to home. But, yeah.
I saw a clip of Mystic Manor recently, and I was like, I really want to ride that attraction because that's like Hong Kong's version of Haunted Mansion. Yeah. So
there's so many that I've just like the Beauty and the Beast attraction.
Oh, yes.
Watching like the transformation scene, I'm like, I'm like blown away, and it's on a YouTube screen because I haven't seen it in person. I don't know what I would do if I saw that happen in front of my eyes.
But
you
it's
know?
That. It's the Shanghai Pirates where mm-hmm. Jack turns into a skeleton or whatever. It's the
dinner when there's all the magic effect at the very end. They do very cool trickery that I've learned recently how they do it, and it's very neat.
For which one?
For Mystic Manor when it's at the very end and the magic's all coming back into the box. Yeah. They do a lot of, if we're spoiling the magic, a lot of scrim.
Oh.
A lot of scrim to make that stuff looking like it's floating in air, and it's very well executed. It's so cool.
Wow. That's so cool.
Reflections on glass and scrim, like two really simple solutions that make things look magical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, to get into it, how did this project come about? I think we should start there.
So before we get into that, I just want to let everyone know, Matthew has done multiple Disney deep dives. The first one we're going to talk about, though, is because of how this is perfect because this is Bambi's book is like threads, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talked with Bambi Moe back a few episodes, she just kind of casually mentioned that there was this rock band in Disneyland, it was like space themed. Like, excuse me? Like, we feel like we know all of the Disneyland things. How did we not know about this? And she's like, oh, there's this really great documentary, da da da, whatever. So fast forward, this last couple months when we were at the barn, Bambi was there, and she happened to introduce us to Matthew was the like director for this amazing documentary that is on YouTube. Don't worry, there will be links in the show notes. So we're going to talk about Helix, and then we're also going to get into some of the other documentaries that you did for other Disney things too. I just think it's so cool. So what made you decide to jump in with Helix? Because it's this kind of niche short thing that has all this mystery but is so cool.
So how it all came together was I got the attention of Kevin Perger, who runs the Funk Land, through another Disney documentary that I made called Remain Seated Please. Mm-hmm. That I feel like we'll probably talk about later, maybe.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Potentially. Okay, so then I'll save that for later. But yes, remember Remain Seated Please. So I made that short doc, and it got a ton of views and a ton of attention, and everyone really, really responded super well to it. And so he was like, I got to work with this guy. So he hit me up, because I had messaged him before, but I had messaged him not really to work together, but more I was trying to figure out like projects to work on, and I was working with the OC Archives. Mm. And they have like tons of Disney footage that I felt like might have been of interest to him. So I let him know, like, hey, if there's anything you want to see, like, I can connect you with the archives and blah, blah, blah. So he had remembered that I'd reached out to him. So then he reached out to me and was like, let's work together. So we got on a bunch of Skype calls. We got on like the first Skype call, and it was like 3 hours, and we got nowhere. And then we got on the second Skype call, and we talked for 3 hours, and we were like, maybe we'll make a documentary about this one guy who is obsessed with monorails somewhere. And then we had another Skype call that was 3 hours, and we got nowhere. And then finally we had like a fourth Skype call, and it lasted 20 minutes because we were just like, hey, hey, and just going and browsing like r/obscure media. And he was browsing through like whatever archives he was looking through. And then all of a sudden he just started like breaking out into this like laughter out of nowhere. And I just thought he had lost his mind, because we had spent at this point like an entire day's worth of like researching possible documentary topics, mm-hmm, and just getting nowhere. And then he just goes, have you ever heard of Helix? Look it up right now. And I was like, okay. And I typed it in. And what I saw on Google was this guy, Jim Magon, who used to work at Disney Animation. He had made 2 blog posts about it. And then there was like 3 really bad audio recordings from when they had performed live that were available on YouTube with like, no joke, like 300 views across all of them. And that was it. And then there was like a black and white photo of the band and a photo of the poster. And that was it. There was just nothing available anywhere at all. And we read Jim Magon's blog post. And then Kevin just said, this is what you're doing. You're making a documentary about Helix, and then hung up the phone.
You're like, so this thing that there's nothing about, find it.
Pulled together my filmmaking team, and I started my research, and just one by one we found like everyone that was ever involved in the band. The one that impresses everyone the most is Mike Post and Gary Kreisel, who were like some of the big producers. Gary Kreisel used to be like a high level exec at Disney. Mike Post, like TV composing legend and music producer legend. Yeah, we got very lucky getting them, because, again, it was just like one person led to another person led to another person. I think how we got Gary was actually because of Bambi, and it was because she was at Comic-Con in 2019, and she was like on a metro, subway, cable car, some situation. Yeah. She was on something. And then in her car that she was in happened to be one of like Gary Kreisel's like assistants or former assistants.
Yeah.
It just perfectly so happened. And so they talked and exchanged information. She was able to send me his info. And then, able to interview literally everyone involved, which was super crazy. And then on top of that, the other crazy thing was the fact that we had saved this thing from being lost to history forever. Mm-hmm. Because pretty much everything that you see in the documentary we all found from, it was all from people's personal archives.
Yeah.
And these are all people that had no plans on uploading any of these things or saving any of these things or scanning any of these things in. So the fact that like we were able to save 400 plus photos of the band that were all taken during their live performances, we were able to track down who had one of the original posters. We were able to track down not one, but two performance footages of the band and song demos and even concert art. And then the other crazy thing is that since the documentary has come out, people have done their tracking and sleuthing to find mm-hmm. things. And Richard Kraft, who is a big Disney collector, big Disney agent, like he's the one that produces all of the Hollywood Bowl like live shows.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's Danny Elfman's agent as well as Alan Menken's agent.
Dang.
Oh, wow.
And he, and if you guys ever heard of this, that's from Disneyland archive, like museum thing. That was his collection.
Wow.
Oh.
So he sold out that entire collection. And, wow. And now in his house, because of our documentary, he added something new for the first time in a long time to his collection because he was inspired by the documentary and being mind blown by the fact that he had never heard of Halix before. So he went out and he hunted down the original artist for the poster and he was able to get the original print.
Oh,
and it's
wow.
now hanging in his dining room, which is crazy. Oh, and then the other thing that people were able to track down was someone messaged me on Twitter saying that they found the commercial. There was a deleted scene from the documentary where a lot of people talked about like this commercial, which I should complete that. Now I'm thinking about it. I should complete that deleted scene and upload that to YouTube now that the commercial exists. But we had all this footage of people talking about this commercial. And we just took it out of the movie because we were like, well, we can't find the commercial footage. Someone on Twitter messaged me and was like, I found it. They found it on like one of those like Disney cast member TV channels.
Oh,
back in like 81, someone uploaded one of those rips.
Yeah.
And it was hidden inside of there. And it was the wrong year. That's the reason why.
Wow.
Because it was like Disneyland 1980. But right. this would have really been, or I think it was 82. But really, this would have been 81.
Wow.
And they just like found it. They found the commercial and it's in great quality. And I re-uploaded it to my YouTube channel, just isolated. But yeah, I mean, it's just so crazy. Like the whole experience of like I said, saving this thing from being lost to history. One of the greatest indirect honors I've ever gotten as a filmmaker. And I won't name names. I won't isolate this person. But there is a person that so we released the documentary in 2020 and we released it on YouTube because every filmmaker we had talked to and everything that we had seen with our own eyes was just if we submit this to film festivals, there's probably going to be a lot of liability with all the media and footage that we use that we don't own. And then also, even if we did get into any film festivals, like it's two people on a Zoom call watching it. Like, at that time, I think Defunctman was about to hit or had hit 1 million subscribers. And it was like, that's the obvious choice is to just upload it for free on there.
And that's the right audience too.
Yeah. And so we were like, let's do this. Let's reach out to as many media people as possible and just see how many articles we can get written up about it and how much publicity we can garner for it. Well, one journalist who had been writing for Disney for a very long time wrote me back an email where they said, and they were completely serious, they were not joking, they said, is this a hoax? Is this a mockumentary?
You're like, no.
And again, I have to stress, they were not joking.
Yeah.
Because then I found out, I don't know, hopefully she won't be mad by me saying this, I found out from Bambi, who found out from someone who was on this email thread, that journalist then went ahead and emailed every single contact that they had in every single branch of the Walt Disney Company.
Wow.
Oh. Showed me the thread. And it was this massive thread of like Disneyland Archives, Disney Archives, Walt Disney Studios, Walt Disney Home Entertainment, Disneyland, Disneyland Entertainment, Imagineering. Like I can go on and on and on. TV, like it hit everyone. And every time it was, I have no idea what that is. I'm going to pass you along to this person. I have no idea what this is. I'm going to pass you along to this person. And then finally, it went back to the Disney archives again. Mm-hmm. And some guy who had been at the archives for way longer than the first person was like, yes, I went into our like system and I typed in Halix. Because if you just walked, if you just like went about into the archives and searched about it in any other way, like you wouldn't find it. Yeah. Like it was like only something that he was able to find if going into his system. And they were like, okay, we can confirm this is real. This was real. And this is what we have. And you want to know what Disney had after all of these years? That same black and white photo that I saw on Google a year and a half prior. And two newspaper clippings that I had not seen.
Wow. So yeah, that 100% was
forgotten. Everything you see in the movie. Oh yeah. Everything you see in the movie, we 100% like that is all us going and working for a year and a half with everyone involved in the band, everyone who came and saw the band and remembered the band and had documented the band, and we saved all of it from being lost to history.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. So for those of you, I'm sure not everyone has watched it, but I'm sure everyone probably is going to watch it now that we've piqued your interest. It's about an hour and a half, this film. So there's a ton of stuff in there. Like yeah. Matthew was saying, there's live footage of the band performing on the stage. There's really well done interviews with different band members who either, I don't think any of them actually had anything physical from their time with Halix, but they at least had like photos of themselves. And then there's all this like fan art and all, there's tons of stuff in here. So that's amazing that you basically unearth that kind of like with a like guerrilla marketing effort
right.
type of thing. Like you just kind of went and like, it just kind of all came out from what people had personally. You had people that were fans that remembered going to the shows. Halix was only performing in Disneyland. What was it? Just the one summer?
Yeah, just the one summer. Yeah. Just for 3 months, about.
So, again, for those of you that don't know, we should maybe back up and explain what Halix was.
Well, why doesn't Matthew tell our audience what Halix was?
Yeah, so basically, Halix was the result of Walt Disney Records deciding that they wanted to be taken seriously in the music industry, because at that time, all that they were known for was making children's read-along records. And they decided one day, they got some young people that were in charge of the company. One of them was Gary Kreisel, who said, hey, like, let's be taken seriously. So this is predating the Hannah Montanas and the Raven Simones and the Jonas Brothers and the Ashley Tisdales of the world that we know today. The first attempt at this was with this band Halix, which Halix, when you Google it and when you see it for the first time, it's instantly going to click with you what it was that they were trying to do.
Yeah.
But what they were trying to do was capitalize on the success of Kiss, which is popular at the time, and the success of Star Wars, which Empire Strikes Back had just come out. And so, yeah, you can very clearly, and that was my first reaction when I first saw the band, I was so confused because I was looking at it and clearly it registered in my brain as this is a knockoff. This is very clearly a knockoff Star Wars Kiss band. Yeah. But most knockoffs, like when you think of the word knockoff, you think of lower effort or low effort. But that was not the case here. And you can clearly tell that when you look at the poster and you see the photos of the band.
Yeah.
You can tell they put money into it. And you can tell that there's Disney quality to it. And it's just this really fascinating thing. And you'll have to watch the documentary to know more. I can't.
It's true.
I don't want to spoil too much. Even talking about the costume and what does and does not exist anymore is a massive spoiler now.
Yeah, totally.
That's true. The thing that's so wild to me was that they put all of this money, all of this time, all of this effort. I mean, they put together this band and it only ended up being just the one season at Disneyland. What you find online now, because this didn't exist prior to you coming out with, you know, you kind of digging this back up and making people interested in it. But like that poster, let alone, how is that poster just advertising something for a couple of months? You know what I mean? Like, it looks like this should have been like a permanent fixture. Like this would have been like something like a Fantasmic or whatever that's there, but maybe it's just seasonal, but it's multiple, you know, it's just kind of a staple. And man, I tell you,
I feel like it's closer. I don't know if you experience this, but I feel like this is closer to, in my mind, just like with the, maybe it's an 80s thing for me, but it gives me like Captain EO vibes.
Oh, sure.
And it, funny enough, it's in that same
by
spot.
4 years.
Yeah.
Right. But and it's even
and pretty much
spot.
All the same people that, yeah, and pretty much all the same people worked on it. Mm. Because Gary Kreisel was like big into Captain EO as well.
Wow.
It's epic. I implore anybody listening, go watch this documentary because
you and need
it's,
to.
It's an hour and a half, and it may seem like, oh gosh, first of all, documentary, an hour and a half on YouTube. I just don't know. It will go by fast because I found
it's
that.
Very funny.
Well, it goes by really fast because I remember I was like, how much is left of this? I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface. And I was like, oh, it's already been an hour. Okay. Like, I don't know. It was very, very good. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it's very good. There's some really interesting twists and turns, let's say, yeah, to it. And just,
it left me wanting more. Like, all I want to do now is I want to go to the old, like, what the stage used to look like and experience this.
They need a Helix tribute band at Disneyland.
And it's crazy because, like, I have, like, such a rare, cool honor of I'm it's because of me. Like, yeah, if anyone knows what this band is, it's because of me.
That's wild.
And that's such a crazy wild concept because like no one else can really claim something like that about anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if someone tries to gatekeep, like there's like people that gatekeep things, right? They gatekeep fandoms and stuff. And like, it's just so weird and silly and immature because people can come across things. No one knew that this band existed except for the people that worked on it. And anyone who was alive that saw it that summer.
Right. That is just
that
crazy.
Happened to go to the Tomorrowland Theater and sit down and watch it and then remember 40 years later. Mm-hmm. So it's so crazy that since the documentary has come out, like I'll go to Disneyland and I'll see someone wearing a Helix shirt. And sometimes I'll go, nice shirt. And they'll go, oh, thanks, man. And I'll just walk by and not say anything. And just know in the back of my head, like you are wearing that shirt because of me, which is so crazy. And it's so funny because, oh my God, sometimes my girlfriend or my friends will like embarrass me because I'll never try to like actually like be like, I made that, you know, but sometimes I'll be with someone who will out me.
Yeah.
And then the person's reaction every time is just like, wait, that's crazy, which is super cool. But yeah, I don't want this to be the end for Helix. I hope that it manifests in some way. What's really also cool is that a lot of people within Disney right now know about the band's existence. And in fact, a really crazy moment that I had, I think it was Star Wars Celebration 22. I think that's when they hosted it in Anaheim.
Yeah.
The last time that they hosted it in Anaheim, they had a panel where they talked about the history of Star Wars and the Disney parks.
Yeah.
And at that panel, Scott Trowbridge, who was at the time the head of Disneyland Imagineering, was like, before I kick off this panel, has anyone ever heard of Helix? I just found out that this exists. And I remember that day I was doing an interview. I was editing with someone. I think I was editing for Stolen Kingdom, which we're going to be talking about in a sec. I think I was editing and I was on a meeting with them. I swear it was. With them. And then I was just like my phone just would not stop vibrating. I was like, I think I have to go. And I was just getting tagged a million times on Twitter of just people being like, oh my God, like this is crazy, this is crazy, this is crazy. And I had two friends that were at the panel that were just like screaming. It was like high school friends of mine that like when he said Helix, they were just like screaming their heads off. And if you like listen carefully on the stream, you can hear them. But I did email him. I know someone who used to be his assistant. And so I got his email and I emailed Scott Trowbridge to be like one, I was asking like, how did this come across your table?
Yeah.
And then two, if you ever need a consultant, because I've heard rumors you guys are redoing Tomorrowland at Disneyland.
Right, right.
Let me know. And it was crazy because he told me that he didn't even know that there was a documentary that existed. Apparently what happened was someone came to him, to make this a full story, someone came up to him at the convention wearing a Halix shirt.
Wow.
And that's awesome. Went, "What's that?" And then the person told him what it was, but didn't tell them about the
Right.
It was this cool band that was only for summer.
Yeah.
Now, I want to mention this because I want our audience to understand the monumental effort that you must have gone through for this. Mm-hmm. Think back. This is 1981. The fact that you have any video footage from this.
Yes. And good quality video footage.
Because at this time, nobody had...
No.
There was no cell phones. There was not a camera in everyone's pocket. So the fact that, like, any footage of this still exists that you were able to find anywhere when it was still unknown when you guys were doing the documentary is amazing. And the fact that, like, there was these people, like you say in the documentary, that, like, were these groupies were kind of, like, there every night or whatever. I don't know. It's insane to me. And I hope that the next time Disney does, like, one of the After Dark nights, it's and they do, like, an 80s night, they should have Halix, because that would be... I think people would go nuts.
Yeah.
I hope so, because I have a feeling that part of the reason why they brought back Videopolis for the last time that they did an 80s night, I feel like was because of kind of Defunctland. And I don't know if Halix is necessarily at the views yet and at the reach yet for something like that to happen. But yeah, I'm hoping. I hope that something happens. I think it'd be so cool. And by the way, touch on that footage real quick. What's even crazier, what blows people's minds when I tell them this, is that that footage was shot by the drummers at the time, like, 8-year-old little brother.
Oh,
what?
It blows my mind every time that I think about that, because he got coverage. Like, he shot the first set mostly in wides, and then he zoomed in and got close-ups during the second set.
Wow.
And held a steady hand with a freaking Hi-8 camera.
Yeah.
It's just like it blows my mind every time that I think about that. Like when he told me that, I was like, "What?" And also the most nervous I've ever been ever in my life was the week where I waited for it to get developed and sent to me.
Wow.
It's just nerve-wracking. Yeah. And I literally like cheered inside of the like the like where I got it developed, and the person was like looking at me so confused. I had like no idea the significance of what they had just scanned in.
You're like, dude, you don't even know, like what this is gonna do.
That's just why I just can't. But like, that's amazing. That's really amazing and really important that you guys found this and that you kind of re-brought light onto it. And like you said, kind of made sure that this didn't get forgotten to history, because that's just wild. But I mean, when you realize, well, it was just like, it was a super cool thing, but it was just the one summer. So yeah, I could see how that could easily have been lost, because it wasn't really that long, but man, was it cool.
Yeah,
I do also want to commend you, because yes, this is on YouTube. However, don't think like you're watching a normal YouTube video.
It's a documentary.
It's a documentary. Yeah. And you guys did such a good job with this. Like, this is something that you could easily see like on Disney Plus. Like, it's that it's a very high caliber, and it's so, so, so well done. I was on the edge of my seat. I felt all the feels. I was sad that I never got to see Halix perform. I was also very sad seeing footage from what Tomorrowland used to look like, and that we don't get to experience that version of.
Which that's another thing, is like the space stage never gets like coverage at all in any like Disney media, any other like documentaries that people have made, and that was really cool to, man, that was like a 4-month process to go through like every single family home video that was ever uploaded to YouTube ever, to one, see if I could find any footage with Halix in it, which I didn't.
Yeah.
But then also while I was searching, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm actually like piecing together some of the only space stage footage that exists.
Yeah. Which is wild. Which, I get why they changed the theater, but it looked, that Space Mountain was the backdrop for what this theater was originally. It was an open air theater, and yeah, just how cool.
You probably have no idea, but I'm just going to ask you anyway. How many hours of footage did you watch to pull together what you did for this, would you say, if you had to guess?
I mean, like I said, like, I, you know, 4 months was, like, just dedicated to, like, just going through space stage footage and just going through home videos to try and find anything of the band. And that was, like, 4 months. Like, almost every night I would, like, from, like, 11 p.m. to, like, 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. just, like, skim through just YouTube video, nothing. Next one. And I was, like, going through the years. So I, like, started in, like, 76. And the other frustrating thing, too, was, like, I knew I had to search in a wide range of years because just, like, with what happened with the commercial, I was, like, not surprised at all that the commercial was mislabeled. I knew. I was, like, if someone uploaded Helix footage, it's probably mislabeled. And I appreciate you talking about the fact that, yes, it is a documentary. Mm-hmm. And that is what we do at Defunctland. We make documentaries. We do not make videos, you know?
Yeah.
We did not make videos and get nominated for a Peabody that way. But I'm not going to take that credit. That's all Kevin. Kevin got his Peabody, not me. But the Helix documentary we were able to raise over $15,000 on Indiegogo.
Wow.
Which really helped a lot with the production and especially the post-production. Because, one last quick story before we move on from Helix, we shot our final interview, and it was with the gentleman who had the Helix poster.
Oh, yeah.
That was our last interview. And when he stood up, when we were finished with the interview, he stood up and he looked at his phone, and he said, "This just in, Disneyland to close due to the COVID-19 pandemic." So literally the most insane timing ever.
Wow.
Of, I guess we're going home and not leaving. And so pretty much all of post-production was just all of lockdown.
Wow.
And of lockdown all until August of 2020.
Wow.
All those months later. It was all in lockdown. Yeah. The timing, it could not have been more perfect. It was wild.
Wow. So one final question. So you went from doing a search of Helix on Google to finding like what, three things, a photo and two blog posts, to then creating this hour and a half long documentary. How long did it take for you to be able to accomplish that? Because you went from nothing to like the entire history, which is just absolutely insane and incredible.
It was almost exactly a year and a half. Wow. It was a little over a year and a half because I started in January of 2019 and then we put it out August 2020.
Wow. That's amazing.
So a year and like 7.5 months, something like that.
Wow.
Wild.
Yeah. Of just like nonstop work with a tiny budget, with a tiny team.
I want to give a shout out too to Defunctland in general because I'm looking at their page right now. 160 videos. I will say I have watched quite a bit of Defunctland videos in my time on YouTube because a lot of the stuff on there is documentary quality. Mm-hmm. Probably spent hours and hours finding footage of various things that's on there. I do remember, I'm pretty sure it was Defunctland did a really great, you could tell me if I'm wrong probably, on FastPass. There was like a whole thing about FastPass.
That's like the most, that's like the most popular, most famous thing from Kevin. Yeah, is the FastPass documentary.
We talked about this on the podcast at length when this came out and we pushed people to it because it was like definitely an interesting history of things and how things all worked out. And so if you watched that, if you're listening to this and you watch that, you will really love this documentary. Yeah. So definitely check it out.
If you enjoy any of the documentaries on Disney Plus,
yes,
you will enjoy this.
If you like Disney history.
It is such an amazing deep dive of what would have been forgotten history. Well, hey, Weekly Tears, we just wanted to let you know our next meetup is just around the corner, almost just over a month away. For D23 weekend, we will be hanging out on Sunday, August 11th from 7 p.m. to close over at the Lazy Dog Restaurant. The Lazy Dog Restaurant is within walking distance from the Honda Center. There's also free parking for those of you that are driving over, but Lazy Dog Restaurant is located on West Catella Avenue in Orange, California. It is free to attend. There will be food and drink available through the restaurant if you choose to purchase those things. I was looking at the menu. They have an amazing array of like all these fun mocktails plus all sorts of like yummy delicious food. I'm already getting excited about what to order when we're there. I'm choosing my different things. Of course, I'm looking at the mocktails first because, you know me and specialty drinks. But anyways, another big exciting thing too is a special guest will be there as well. Imagineer Terry Harden and her crew are also having a meetup. We're kind of having a dual meetup at the same time, at the same place. Shout out to Weekly Tier Stephanie F for organizing this all. But yeah, so Imagineer Terry Harden will also be there hanging out that evening. Again, this is going to be 7 p.m. on Sunday, August 11th, over at the Lazy Dog Restaurant in Orange, California.
Hope to see you all there.
Woo! Welcome back to Trivia Land, Shell. My name's Raymond, and I hope them answers are bigger and better than this here back porch I got attached to me. Don't you know Evangeline and I wish y'all the best of luck.
Hello, welcome back. You're back in Trivia Land. It's amazing.
Amazing. I don't know. I feel like when we were here a little bit earlier in the episode, we didn't do as well as we could have.
I mean, that just makes the attraction that much more interesting, right?
Sure. Let's learn some stuff.
Yeah. All right. My first question of the week was, what is the name of the area near Harbor Galley that can serve as a dry dock for the Mark Twain and sailing ship Columbia? Affectionately known by Walt as Joe's Ditch, but we will call it today Fowler's Harbor.
Fowler's Harbor. Joe Fowler, Admiral Joe Fowler.
Dang it.
Who was responsible for getting Disneyland constructed.
Oh,
accomplished,
man.
So much.
As so,
didn't he also
as
go and
soon?
Help in World?
As soon as you said Fowler's Landing, it's like, yes!
Yeah.
Dang it. I didn't even remember that I knew that.
Dang it. It was in my head somewhere, but I was not close enough for this one.
I was stuck on Pelican's Landing.
Yeah, that's where you screwed us up, because you got us thinking landing.
I'm here for
you. That's cruel.
It's all thanks to our trip on the canoes around the rivers that I saw the word Fowler's Inn up on the thing, and I'm like, what on earth is that place? And wow, that was great history to learn. He really had to fight for that dry dock. I don't know if you know this. Walt was like, not a chance.
Really?
Yeah.
Because where else were they going to fix things?
Yeah. He just wanted to put like a pile of dirt that they could go up on or something.
Wow. Dang. Okay.
I didn't read close enough, but I just remember like there was a battle.
I mean, I'm glad he won.
I got to leave it to the Admiral to win the battle.
Not having it. That's wild.
Yeah. All right. My second question, which I tried to give you a hint of the area that you could find the depiction of Mary Read in the park.
I'm sure it's back in Fowler's Landing. No. Fowler's, what was it?
Harbor. Fowler's Harbor.
Harbor.
Yeah.
You got me stuck on Landing.
I told you.
And then
he's
I didn't
sneaky.
Think Harbor was right because it's Harbor Galley. So I'm like, no.
Sneaky. You needed to jump over towards Lafitte's Landing. She is one of the people drawn in the murals in the queue for Pirates. She is pictured next to where you go up the waterfall, and she shares that with another character.
Yes.
Huh, okay.
I have no idea if all of those characters have, like, history or story behind it either. I just find them really fascinating that some of them are, like, Captain Barbossa, and then some of them are Mary Read.
Well, because some of them, I think, were there, like, originally, and then They added some. They've either added or swapped some out when the Pirates films came out, because obviously Captain Jack Sparrow wasn't there originally either.
Right.
Yep.
And it's Anne Bonny and Mary Read.
That's it. Yep. All right. Third question. Who hosts each game in Toy Story Midway Mania, not including the pie throw practice? And here's the tip that would have helped you. Some of them have co-hosts.
Oh. So if we get one of the two hosts, do we still get the point?
Yeah, I'll give you like half points.
Okay.
So our first game called Ham and Eggs.
Told
is
you.
Hosted by
just wait
Ham and Buttercup.
Oh.
Which one's Buttercup?
The little unicorn.
Oh.
Right? Yep.
Some of these characters and stuff were added just ahead of the Toy Story 3 release.
Oh.
Huh. So technically there were spoilers of characters to come.
Okay.
Our second one is Rex and Trixie's Dino Darts.
Rex and Trixie.
Trixie, because that's the female dinosaur.
Yep, those little triceratops.
Yeah.
That one replaced Bo Peep's Balloon or Balloon Palooza or something.
Oh.
Like Balloon.
Okay.
So that's where we got that one added in there. The third one, well, you knew that one. It's Sarge hosting the Green Army Men Camp one. Teresa.
Nice.
Teresa good, just good apparently job. Has nightmares of break those plates.
Yeah.
The fourth game is Buzz Lightyear's Flying Tossers.
There you go.
You can guess that's Buzz Lightyear.
You know what? I think Jesse's the last one.
And the last game is Woody's Rootin' Tootin' Shootin' Gallery. Jesse shows up early in the pie practice to help you out.
Oh, Jesse's in the pie
yeah.
practice. Okay.
And I think she does show up with Woody's as well, but not technically listed on that one. So... because I think she might be one of the people who yells at you to just keep shooting.
That's,
you're almost
yeah,
there.
That's what I'm like. Ooh. I remember she's like yelling at you while you're like trying to.
I'm dying. My arm, it hurts. And my final question for you was a cast member costume. White fluffy button-up shirts covered with a brown vest, orange pants, brown boot-like shoes. They can wear a hat if they want to. You're on the right track for getting on a ship. But you got on the wrong one. You should have boarded the sailing ship Columbia.
There you go.
Which I got to ride for like the first time this trip, and I thought those costumes were awesome.
Oh, James.
So definitely took note of those. Well, the good news for you two is I'm almost out of new notes from the trip, so it's going to be up to the listeners to stump you along with whatever research I get inspired for. So maybe good news for you, or maybe bad news if you like learning new stuff. But either way, listeners, if you want to help out, send producer Vern and I some trivia, just head to our website, dlweekly.net/trivia.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
And a special thank you to Sidell for editing the podcast.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. So start your free trial of SiriusXM today. Visit SiriusXM.com/believe.